About 4 years ago, I saw a tiny squib on the back page of my church bulletin. If you were, as novelist Farrell Sams calls it, raised right, you know what I mean. It's that folded 8x10 printed paper that lists the song pages and the order of worship, and it tells you about the youth and children's programs for the week. On the backside, in a list of announcements, I found a sentence, maybe two, saying that folks who were interested in serving in prison should meet that night at a nearby library. I turned to my husband and I said, "I have to go to this." It was very strong. Now, like everyone on the planet, I have little flashes of intuition. Once, the night before a flight, I dreamed that my plane was crashing. I was looking out of that little porthole window and I could see the wing was on fire, and it was so real. I woke up with my heart pounding and I had tears on my face. The flight was New York City back home here to Atlanta, which meant there was another flight practically every hour on the hour. So you know what I did? I went right to the airport and I got on my regularly scheduled flight and I came home on the most uneventful trip in Delta's history because I'm not a blonde in a B-horror movie and I'm a pragmatist. When I have feelings about things or dreams or intuitions, I attribute them to bad clams or sometimes it's a new novel starting in my subconscious. But this little squib compelled me in a way that felt like an actual call, which a call is not a thing pragmatists hear, maybe because they don't exist, maybe because as pragmatists, we aren't listening. But this one was loud and I heard it. And look, it wasn't truly psychic. Psychologically, I can explain it in hindsight. I've never been to prison, but I do have personal connections. There are people I love very much who have. And so this call to work inside of one would ring out in my subconscious. And beyond that, I run with a pretty social justice-obsessed crowd. We talk about these things. And two, on a national level, there's a growing awareness of exactly how many people we're incarcerating in this country. According to the Washington Post, the United States has about 5% of the world population and 25% of the world's total prison population. That means we have the highest prison population rate in the world. And there's a genuine national concern about the disparity of justice based on race and socioeconomic class. So I think there was also some collective unconscious style proddings. These conversations are happening all around me. But nonetheless, I had a feeling, and for one of the first times in my life, I acted on it. I went to the library and I plopped down in the only seat left, which was beside a woman with kind of a sharp haircut wearing Warby Parker sunglasses, and that made her seem kind of cool to me. So I started talking to her to see if she knew anything about the program. I wanted to up my comfort level because I had no idea what it was actually about. I had two sentences. And she hadn't worked with this organization. She was just there to sit in, because she ran a different organization, and she started telling me about her job. Her name was Wendy Ballew, and she's the executive director of a nonprofit called Reforming Arts. Well, the easiest thing to do is just read you their mission statement. Reforming Arts provides a theater-infused liberal arts education to women under carceral control in Georgia. Through education in prison and reentry programs, we foster the development of critical and creative thinking skills, encouraging students to build livable lives. So this is a group that believes in education, and specifically arts education, as a key to reducing recidivism, to helping women choose to not go right back into crime and then right back into prison. And there's tons of studies that back up the value of education. Everyone from Loyola University to the RAND Corporation say, if we want people to leave prison and rejoin society and live a sustainable, crime-free, satisfying life connected to their families, education is key. And I think everyone wants that, even if you're not a redemption-obsessed novelist. Even if you are wildly conservative, do you want your tax dollars spent locking up people who've already served their time? Do you want them to reoffend, or do you want them to become useful members of society? Well, if it's B, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. There has to be opportunity. There has to be reflection. And I believe you get these things with education. So I'm digesting everything she said, and the meeting starts, and the ministry that they have going, that they've asked for volunteers for, y'all, it's a driving ministry. It's about driving, which I am the world's worst driver. I am physically terrified of cars. People hate to get into cars with me because I creep along like Meemaw. I vroom, vroom, slow. I rev and I brake and I rev all bug-eyed. And I have nervous prostration if I have to change lanes. I moved to Decatur mostly because I can walk almost everywhere I go. The grocery store, church, the YMCA, 3 farmers markets, a multitude of little cafes, and I am a novelist, so bars, that's important. I like living there because I'm terrified of driving. And don't get me wrong, what this group was doing is really important. They're driving the children of inmates to see their mothers. Many times, these kids are in foster care, or they're staying with relatives who live far or who don't have the means or the transportation to get the kids out there to see their mothers. And another thing that studies show reduces recidivism is if incarcerated people maintain those ties to their children and families. That is huge motivation if you're returning to a world where you love and are loved back. That's invaluable. So this is an important ministry. But at the same time, the idea of loading up a giant van with herds of children and trying to merge onto I-285, I got palpitations just thinking about it. And I thought, oh, yeah, you sure felt a call to come to this meeting, dummy. So I sat all glassy-eyed and angry that I had let my pragmatist self be suckered by a feeling, and I doodled on my legal pad all through the meeting, and knowing that this wasn't anything I was ever going to be able to do. And while I sat there, I started thinking about writing, about the arts and education, and everything that I, as a redemption-obsessed novelist, believe about narrative power, how we change ourselves by changing our stories. And I thought, oh no, maybe that one chair was open for a reason. And when the meeting closed, I turned to the woman in the Warby Parker glasses and I said, I don't drive. I want to work with you. Atlanta's largest literary event, Decatur Book Festival, is coming at us fast this Labor Day weekend. One of the neat things DBF does is organize their many events into tracks. Whether you like history or philosophy, hard science or science fiction, poetry or politics, DBF has a track for you. To find yours, you just go to the website and choose your area of interest from a drop-down menu, and events you might be interested in load. For example, if I choose religion and spirituality, I see a range starting with noted Christian ethicist Dr. David Gushy at 10 a.m. on Saturday, engaging with anxiety and social change. And then I can follow that track onto 11, where Catherine Osmont, an award-winning journalist, discusses secular humanism and her book, Grace Without God. And then I can close the day out with a panel on science and the divine in the cosmos that includes an astrophysicist, Dr. Paul Wallace. Then there are 3 more events set up like that for me on Sunday in that area of interest, dealing with agnosticism, social justice, and the Talmud. And if that's not your bag, there are many other tracks to choose from. Go find yours at DecaturBookFestival.com. For WABE, I'm Jocelyn Jackson.